ocean breeze, tropical beach, piña colada. You can buy an air freshener to make your car smell like you're in an oceanside paradise. Or, better yet, you can point your car toward Daytona Beach and come experience the real thing. Visit DaytonaBeach.com to discover all there is to see, do, and enjoy along the world's most famous beach, Daytona Beach, Florida. Beach on.
In Atlanta, one voice has stood out for over four decades. An AJC original, The Monica Pearson Show.
Let's talk about how you got to ESPN.
Revealing interviews.
You are known as America's doctor, but I want to know who you were before that.
When you have a different name, you have different color skin, it can be tough.
With Atlanta's most famous faces as you've never seen them before.
I'm telling my story. This is the American dream.
The Monica Pearson Show, streaming now on AJC.com.
An epic Republican split.
I am here to support Brian Kemp.
Get out and vote. David Perdue.
Welcome to Politically Georgia from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, the podcast we want you to depend on for the most on-the-ground coverage of the 2022 election. I'm your host, Greg Bluestein, along with your other host, Patricia Murphy. And we're here today with special co-host Tia Mitchell. We are the political insiders here at the AJC. And when we say on the ground, we mean on the ground because all three of us are now taping this podcast from an airport hangar in North Cobb County in the beautiful city of Kennesaw, just after former Vice President Mike Pence came and campaigned for Brian Kemp. And Patricia, it was kind of a wild evening because at the very same time, or just about as Mike Pence was ending, Donald Trump was doing a tele-rally for David Perdue.
David is going to be able to win and win easily because he's got the spirit. But he's running against Kemp, who lied as a rhino, who would, along with his friend Raffensperger, allowed the Georgia election to be rigged and to be stolen. It was rigged and it was stolen.
You can feel that Georgia is at the center of it all when Mike Pence and Donald Trump are both trying to have their way in the governor's race at the exact same time. And that's where we are tonight.
That's where we are tonight, Tia. And this is also the biggest split between Mike Pence and Donald Trump since the 2020 election. I mean, I can't think of any bigger split between the two men, at least in terms of endorsements. So this might set the stage for some interesting 2024 maneuvering.
Yeah, it looks like Mike Pence is setting the stage to run in 2024, no matter what former President Trump does. So that would be interesting to see a president and his former, you know, handpicked running mate running against him. But right now, you know, it's a proxy battle through Georgia. So I love that all eyes are here. Did you all see the number of media here?
Oh, yeah.
Like, compared to even the runoffs, it's so much bigger, so much more focused on Georgia.
It kind of feels like we're the only game in town right now.
Yeah, you know, and there's a few other interesting primaries tomorrow in Texas and in
Alabama.
Alabama has a great one.
Yes.
But no, we had multiple CNN, New York Times, Washington Post, a bunch of heavyweights came down here, and it was fun kind of jarring back and forth with them. But Patricia, you know, when you're talking about the value of Mike Pence's endorsement, look, there's not as many loyal Mike Pence supporters as Donald Trump supporters. So this is probably more important to Mike Pence as a message than it is to Brian Kemp. But it certainly shows you that the Trump foes, the Trump critics, those who are distancing themselves from the former president, they're starting to rally around Brian Kemp because it's not just Mike Pence. You know, we saw Chris Christie the other day. George W. Bush donated to Brian Kemp's campaign. Doug Ducey was down here. Pete Ricketts was down here. So a number of sort of, I don't know if you call them establishment or just Trump critics, old guard Republicans maybe might be the best way to describe them. They're rallying around Brian Kemp right now.
Yeah, and what's so fascinating is that the one person who is not a Trump critic is Brian Kemp. He has managed to really thread this needle, and if he pulls this off in the primary, and then we have to have a whole other conversation about November, but if he can pull this off in the Republican primary in Georgia of being relentlessly attacked and verbally assaulted and targeted for defeat by Donald Trump during the Trump era and kind of the Republican Party of Donald Trump, and yet Brian Kemp is finding a way back to success. He is really starting to put together a recipe to be on Donald Trump's bad side, but not be on Donald Trump voters' bad side. Republicans can't live without those Donald Trump voters. They need those voters. But Brian Kemp, in this particular case, also needs to find a way to stand by the decisions he's made in the past with the election and still get reelected in the state. And he is putting, to me, it's almost like solving the Rosetta Stone. He is finding the magic, the secret sauce of how to survive in this Republican Party. And I think other Republicans are hopping on that bandwagon.
Yeah, I think that's like when we try to describe why all these old guard establishment Republicans are coming to Brian Kemp's aid. It's just that, because they want a blueprint for how to move forward past Donald Trump. It's not, I don't think they want to like get rid of him, but they want to know, how can we win races, especially in swing states like Georgia, without needing to rely on Donald Trump? Because quite frankly, Georgia taught them that if you lean too hard on Donald Trump, it can backfire, because some of the things he says aren't helpful. And we saw that even during today's Teller rally, which I'm sure we'll get to. But, you know, so they're very invested, not so much in Georgia, but they're invested in figuring out how to win, figuring out how to move on. And I think they see that Governor Kemp appears to have come up with a good solution. And as you mentioned, part of that is, even as he's attacked by Donald Trump almost daily, he doesn't speak poorly about Donald Trump. He just doesn't speak about Donald Trump at all. But he avoids criticizing Donald Trump. And I think that has helped him, because it's managed to not alienate those members of the party who are still pretty loyal to the former president.
See, I was going to ask you about that, because you mentioned the blueprint. It is a blueprint, but it's, if indeed Kemp wins on Tuesday, but it's a really hard to replicate blueprint too, because you have an incumbent Republican governor with a very conservative record. It'll be a lot harder for candidates without Trump's endorsement, with this facing this sort of backlash, to win if they're in open races without that sort of record. But this, you've seen, certainly you covered the 2018 campaign, you've seen Kemp in action before, but we're just coming off of a major speech. I'm curious your reaction to the fact that he's trying to, you know, watching him live, trying to navigate this balance. He didn't say a single negative word about Trump, and I've never heard him say one, at least in the last 2 years.
Yeah, and not only not a negative word about Donald Trump, and he's also running as he's already the nominee. So he didn't have anything to say about David Perdue either. But, you know, back to Trump, I think it is going to be hard to replicate. But I think if there are Republicans who are trying to pay attention and try to figure out what are the takeaways, number one, you've got to have a record to stand on your own without anybody. And Governor Kemp, with the help of the General Assembly, which is, you know, led by Republicans who clearly wanted to see him succeed, they gave him plenty to run on. You know, he's got tax cuts, he's got addressing the high gas prices, he's got economic development and all these new businesses coming, he's got the constitutional carry gun bill, he's got signing the abortion bill, he's got all these things he can run on that, you know, who can say he's not a true conservative when you look at all the things he's championed and looked at all the things he did? And then he has, I think, very smartly pivoted and ignored Donald Trump, so he didn't have sound bites that could be used against him by Trump allies and Trump loyalists. And even when it came to the big lie, Brian Kemp resisted doing what Donald Trump wanted him to do as far as overturning the 2020 election. But even then, I remember he resisted kind of going out there and attacking Donald Trump. You know, he tried to take the high road and not make it about Trump. He made it about, hey, I can't do this thing. I don't think this thing needs to be done that I'm being asked to do. So, hey, I'm not going to do it. But it was never like shame on Donald Trump, which is, I think, again, part of that blueprint.
And he's still signed into law legislation inspired by Donald Trump's falsehoods that creates new obstacles to the ballot box. Patricia, if there is a central message, though, to Kemp's argument, and really David Perdue's in a way too, but more of Kemp's, it's that electability, he's the only Republican who can beat Stacey Abrams. And over the weekend, we heard a comment from Stacey Abrams that is sort of the father of all sorts of campaign attacks. Let's listen.
I am tired of hearing about being the best state in the country to do business when we are the worst state in the country to live. Now, somebody's going to try to politifact me on this, so let me contextualize. When you're number 48 for mental health, when you're number one for maternal mortality, when you have an incarceration rate that's on the rise and wages that are on the decline, then you're not the number one place to live in the United States. But we can get there.
Now, Patricia, you know, we heard the whole comment right now, but we know that Republicans are going to focus on the snippet where she says Georgia is the worst state in the nation. And this is going to be something that, like in 2018, the Republicans are going to try to make her regret those.
Yes, and they already are hard at work trying to make Stacey Abrams regret that. And here at the event with Mike Pence and Brian Kemp, we heard about that line no fewer than half a dozen times, both from Brian Kemp and from Mike Pence. Each said, well, apparently Stacey Abrams thinks Georgia is not the best state to live. Let's hear some of what Pence and Kemp had to say earlier.
And everybody's already referenced this breaking news out there from a few days ago when Stacey Abrams was talking to some left-wing activists in Gwinnett County about how she was tired of hearing about Georgia being the number one state in the country for business and that we're the worst state to live in. Well, I don't know about y'all, but I'm glad we're the number one state in the country for business. Now, I just heard on my way here that Stacey Abrams said she's getting tired of hearing about Georgia being the best state in the country to do business. You know, but judging from Governor Kemp's record, like the 7,500 new jobs coming to Hyundai outside Savannah, Stacey, you better get used to it.
Now, Stacey Abrams, of course, had other context for that argument, and in fact, it played so well in that room that there was a huge applause after that, after she went into all of the details about being first in the state for maternal mortality and having failed to expand Medicaid. So when you can explain it, you can understand where she was going with that. But you don't have time to explain things in Georgia politics. I mean, listen, I read that line and in my mind, I'm like, there's no way she said that, because I read it on Twitter on Saturday night. I'm like, come on, there's no way. And then sure enough, it's exactly what she said. It almost looked like it was scripted. I mean, it was a very deliberate line. I would like to explain there's not a hurricane coming through.
We're at an airport, folks. So that was
They're just breaking down the stage, and it literally sounds like a weather event.
Yeah, I think that was an airplane either landing or taking off. Yeah.
Coming in? Oh, yeah, stop.
Remember, we're at a hangar.
I know. Well, so, I didn't know there was an airport, I mean, an airplane in the hangar.
Georgia listeners, we bring you right to the heart of the action.
And my back is toward the action, so I don't know
what's going
on.
For once, we're not in our cars, though, do you?
I think that was maybe Stacey Abrams running to clean up her mess. You know, like, that line, I think Stacey Abrams is realizing that as much as she wants to speak her mind, she still has to think like a candidate. You still have got to choose your words carefully, because Republicans are going to take you out of context. And some of that, she won't be able to stop them from taking out of context. She won't be able to stop them from twisting her words, but she can not give them ammunition. And I think that's something, you know, it's a lesson learned. It's early in the campaign. She's, you know, a little rusty, I think, and she's got to get back in there. It's not the worst gaffe, but this one, I think, is a lesson learned for her. But to your point, the greater point is that there are a lot of indicators where Georgia's not doing so well. And that does, I think, resonate particularly with Democratic voters.
Yeah. But even Brian Kemp, in his own words, he will say, now Georgia's not there yet. We still have work to do. I think voters, especially right now, want a sunny, optimistic outlook with a dose of reality that, and we're not there yet. But I think to come out so hard against the state, even as the explanation makes perfect sense to everybody in the room, that's going to need a heavy retooling. Are you coming out with a message for voters that is optimistic, or that is a laundry list of everything that Brian Kemp has done wrong?
If anything, though, also, Stacey Abrams is self-aware, because right after she said that, she goes, I know Republicans are going to attack me, but, and it reminded me of 2018 when we were covering the campaign, Tia, And Stacey Abrams was on the campaign trail down in Statesboro, and she had some off-the-cuff remark about how people in the agriculture and the tourism industry shouldn't have to do those jobs. And she immediately corrected herself. I mean, within you know, moments, she corrected herself, but it didn't matter because Republicans had that clip, and boy, did they use it against
her. And they're still using that clip against her, you know? And it's part of the game. Yeah. It's part of campaigning. It's part of the tracking, and every word is going to be used against them, and it's kind of what keeps politicians buttoned up. And one of the things that's refreshing about Stacey Abrams is she does at least come across as not so scripted, not so, you know, buttoned up, that it helps her connect with voters because they believe she's genuine. They believe she speaks her mind and that she's not just going through talking points because she thinks they poll well. That's at least her brand. You know, she's smart, so I'm not saying she's completely off the cuff at all, but her brand is that genuine connection she tries to have when she speaks to people. But there are trade-offs, you know, because every now and then you'll say something that may be heartfelt and based in truth, but doesn't always, you know, that could, you know, be used against you.
This is Politically Georgia from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
Ocean breeze, tropical beach. An air freshener can make your car smell like paradise. A drive to Daytona Beach will actually get you there. Beach on. Plan your trip today at DaytonaBeach.com.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
And we're back to Politically Georgia from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. I'm your host, Greg Bluestein, along with your other host, Patricia Murphy, and our special co-host, Tia Mitchell, our Washington correspondent down in Georgia for the day, or for the week,
I should say.
Yeah, what am I thinking? Day. And we are your three political insiders at the AJC. We're also your three authors of The Morning Jolt, which we think is the bee's knees. We think it sets the stakes and the agenda in Georgia
sure
politics.
Do.
And you can get it in your inbox every morning if you're a subscriber to the AJC. You can join the community now by going to subscribe.ajc.com/podcasts. And guess what? Your first month of unlimited digital access is just 99 cents. I can't even think of a better, even 98
cents. What else
cents.
Can you even buy for 99
cents?
I would
say less than a cup of coffee.
I mean, a lot less. Yeah, man.
It's about a quarter of a cup of coffee.
So join our community so you always know what's really going on. And I wish I knew what was really going to go into the jolt tomorrow because
what is really going on, Greg?
Late, but we'll have a really great jolt for you that kind of sets the stage, sets the stakes for the election.
Yes. Well, it's going to be a look ahead what we're watching for the election because my goodness gracious, there's going to be a lot.
So we've spent a lot of time talking about Kemp versus Perdue, but you know, there's 12 other Trump-backed candidates on the ballot, and the one that's getting even more attention in the Senate race, because Herschel Walker has such a huge lead, is the battle for Secretary of State.
Yes.
And if you had told me a year ago that Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger had an actual chance, even if it was slim, of a outright victory on primary day, I would have taken that bet in a heartbeat against that.
He was dead man walking around
right.
this state. And listen, and I've said this before, I wrote a profile of Brad Raffensperger at the height of his interactions and fights with Donald Trump. And I reached out to a number of Republicans who were allies of his. And no one would go on the record to say something nice about Brad Raffensperger, they were so afraid to cross Donald Trump in that moment. So he was just a man out there on an island, and it really felt like he was going to be the only person to vote for himself on election day. Of course, along with his lovely wife, Tricia. But he had no friends in this town. And lo and behold, he is still in this race. He's essentially tied with Jody Heiss, who has Donald Trump's backing. He is spending a lot of money. I spoke with some Republican voters earlier today. He is just loading up mailboxes with flyers, lots of literature, a four-page glossy today with the front of it is just a big zero, and the interior says that's how many bills Jody Heiss introduced in Congress related to election integrity. So he's not, you know, Raffensperger is not giving this thing away, and I'm really fascinated by the race he's running and the traction he's gotten.
He is not going quietly into that night at all. And yeah, Tia, he could end up in a nationally watched runoff. I mean, if what we think of the polls that indicate that Kemp will win outright easily and that Herschel Walker could win outright easily, we're talking about a June runoff that will attract heaps of national attention and could very well bring Donald Trump back to Georgia, this time to stump for exclusively for Jody Heiss.
Yeah, I think it's so interesting. Number one, I think it's going to be interesting to see if either Team Raffensperger or Team Heiss regrets that change that shrinks the runoff time period, because they're going to have just a month, whereas under the old law, they would have had more time to make a case. So whoever, if they make it to a runoff and if they ultimately lose, I think they're going to say, if I only had more time to raise more money and to get my message out to voters, maybe there would be a different outcome. But they can blame the members of their party.
9 weeks to three.
Yeah. 9 weeks to three. So, but I also think it's so interesting that 3 or 4 weeks
ish.
Month ish. But, you know, I think that, you know, Raffensperger is different than Governor Kemp in that. Let big lies set that aside. In general, it's a pretty understated role. Most people don't know who the Secretary of State is, let alone what the Secretary of State does. And so it's harder, I think, for him to make a case like, other than the big lie, what is he really known about? Other than fighting with Donald Trump about the big lie. He doesn't really have much of an identity or much name recognition beyond that. So it's hard to separate himself from that. And I think that's why you see it closer for him. That being said, Jody Heiss is still struggling to get his own name recognition out there, because most folks don't know him except for he's the guy Trump likes, and mm-hmm. you know, he's a member of Congress somewhere in Georgia where, you know, a lot of people don't live, you know, a pretty rural area, you know. So I think it's going to be fascinating, but it's going to be it looks like it's going to be a runoff, and then it's just going to be a wild month of them really going at each other.
And you know who this period, well, first of all, you know who doesn't miss 9 week runoffs? Voters and reporters having to go cover a 9 week runoff. And it does tend to benefit people with money. And Brad Raffensperger is a multimillionaire, and he's already self-financed his campaign to a large degree, and he can build that operation. He can scale up if he needs to. The question is, how much of his own money will he want to spend? But there's also bound to be other really interesting runoffs and other really interesting races. And it is very hard to predict how these Democratic contests are going to go. We're talking about Democratic races for lieutenant governor, Democratic races for secretary of state, even for labor commissioner and agriculture.
And that 7th district.
And the 7th district. And Tia, you've been covering Carolyn Bordeaux, Lucy McBath, two well-respected members of Congress with their own brands, with their own followings, who both represented the rising Democratic tide in the suburbs. Now, by Republican redrawing of those districts, pushed in together in a sense, forcing in a way Lucy McBath to switch districts and run in the 7th district, which is now a safely Democratic seat.
Yeah, that's the race that I'm, you know, really watching. And it doesn't have, you know, kind of the national attention that some of our statewide races have. But it's going to be very interesting because, you know, the third candidate in the race, Donna McLeod, the state representative, you know, she likes to say, I'm the only one who actually lives in this district. But she's likely to be a distant third. She just wasn't able to raise nearly the money or have nearly the name recognition that Representatives McBath and Bordeaux have after serving in Congress. Lucy McBath has a lot more money. She has some big PACs, deep pocket groups that are campaigning for her. She's sending a lot of mailers. But I think one of the things that Carolyn Bordeaux used to kind of try to, I don't want to say attack, that's probably too strong, but poke holes in McBath's campaign is saying McBath focuses so much on her personal story and like just general appeal. Does she really understand this district? Does she really understand what she wants to do, not just as every woman congresswoman, but District 7, this really unique, diverse patch of Metro Atlanta? And so Bordeaux's really focused on that, like saying, I've represented more of these people than McBath has. And I actually know this district, know its challenges. I've been working here. And McBath had to pivot a little bit and focus more on the district in recent weeks. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens on primary day. A lot of people feel like McBath is the front runner, but I see, you know, there could be a possibility that that goes to a runoff.
Yeah. And I think that Bordeaux, you know, if you had to sort of lay over two ways to describe this, it's sort of like the workhorse and the show horse, meaning that McBath is so skilled at communication. She is so well known nationally. She has such a tight message. And Bordeaux has just been working those grassroots. Every school board member knows her. Every member of each of those county commissions knows her. She has met with them. And she's in that district a lot, on the ground a lot. And she has more of those local endorsements instead of the national endorsements. She has African-American local lawmakers supporting her. And so it will be just fascinating to see how these two dynamics play out. And I think it will really tell us a lot about what direction Democratic voters want to go in, because there is a contrast between these two candidates, and we'll know a lot. It's such a quickly changing district, and it's going to be the exact kind of district that Democrats in the nation need to do well in. And so they'll be able to take this as a blueprint to say, okay, this is a message about the direction we should consider in the future.
Okay. While you still have the ball, and before we get kicked out of this hangar that we're taping
before they take our own table down.
Yes. I want to go around the horn and ask each of you, other than the races we've already discussed, which is the top race you'll be watching on Tuesday for the primary? Patricia.
Other than the races we have already discussed.
We've talked about governor. We've talked about this, some of the down secretary of state, some of those down-ticket races in the 7th District.
Absolutely.
What else are you very closely watching?
Well, very closely watch, of course, you know, let me put a pin in it, the attorney general's race. Chris Carr right now, from internal polling, is polling about 2-1 over John Gordon. I have seen John Gordon in a couple of these activist settings, and he just lights that place on fire. I mean, he is speaking the 2,000 mules activist message.
Stop
the steal. Stop this steal.
Prosecuting teachers if they teach CRT.
Oh my goodness. Send them to jails. You know, somebody broke the law. Can't say who broke the law, you know. But he makes perfect sense to those activists. And he is somebody who has really lit up a little bit at the grassroots. So I'll be watching that race carefully.
So for me, the honorable mention goes to the District 6 Republican primary, Rich McCormick and Jake Evans. But the race I want to talk about is the one in Southwest Georgia, District 2. We know Republicans want to flip that seat, take it away from longtime Democrat Sanford Bishop. But that Republican primary, there's a guy who's like kind of that establishment move on from Trump group is backing Jeremy Hunt. Mm-hmm. And all the other candidates are like, where did this guy come from? He didn't even live here a couple
but
months
he's on
ago.
Fox all the time.
He's on Fox all the time. And he kind of came from that commentator. He's very much in that brand like CJ Pearson type. Mm-hmm. And so, but he's, you know, got an adorable family.
Was he
and
Yale
he's
a Law School?
Yale Law yep. School veteran. And so it's looking,
military community.
Yes. So he checks a lot of boxes off, except for having many ties to that district. But it's, you know, Republicans think he's the best chance to win against Sanford Bishop in the fall. So it'll be really interesting to see if Republican voters in that district agree.
That leaves me with Bullitt County Commission seat, District 1. No.
Come on. Like, it must be some drama there. I'm ready to. No, here for it.
Like, oh, I've been waiting for this answer all day.
No, I have to go with 10th District then because it hasn't come up yet. But I wrote once that that was the biggest test of Donald Trump's influence in the nation. And we don't know if it's still the case. But still, when Donald Trump endorsed former Democrat Vernon Jones, the former CEO of DeKalb County, a former liberal Democrat who up until about a year ago was still a Democratic state lawmaker, when he endorsed him for that seat, it meant that he was laying a lot on the line to clear the field for David Perdue. So he did a lot. I mean, when people say that Donald Trump is inching away, he's distancing himself from David Perdue, that could be true, but he has already put so much into this campaign for David Perdue, including helping to clear the field for David Perdue by getting Vernon Jones to switch races and run in rural Northeast Georgia from his Metro Atlanta home. So there's a lot to unpack, and we will continue to unpack it for you at the Politically Georgia podcast. You can count on new episodes of this podcast to come out, I don't know, all the time, every Wednesday, Friday, or whenever news breaks, which is a lot these days. And we will see you then on Politically Georgia from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
Ocean breeze, tropical beach, piña colada. You can buy an air freshener to make your car smell like you're in an oceanside paradise. Or, better yet, you can point your car toward Daytona Beach and come experience the real thing. Visit DaytonaBeach.com to discover all there is to see, do, and enjoy along the world's most famous beach, Daytona Beach, Florida. Beach on.
Hip-hop is a product of black people. It's a product of black song and celebration.
The Atlanta Journal-Constitution presents
hip-hop's most pulled elements are pulled from the South.
A Southern hip-hop story.
We always go back to that moment of the Source Awards.
Everybody wants your rhythm, but they don't want your blues.
The biggest names in hip-hop.
Atlanta is still the mecca for hip-hop.
50 years.
No one can deny.
One film.
The power of the South now.
The South got something to say. Streaming now at AJC.com/hip-hop.